Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Peristyle Podcast. This is a Trojan Blast recruiting edition of the Peristyle Podcast, talking all about USC football recruiting. We are back after a couple-week hiatus where Gerard and I were running all over the globe trying to track down everything that's going on with USC recruiting. So we have Gerard Martinez on the show joining us. He is back from San Antonio, Texas for the U.S. Army All-American Bowl. Lots of recruiting scoop from down there. Gerard, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. But you know what this show really needs? It needs sound effects, because evidently USC recruiting, the sky is falling. Do you have a sound effect for that, Ryan?
Woo! Bong. No, I don't. Maybe I can insert one of those in later. Yeah, I agree. We do have some questions. There's some gloom and doom out there,
Gerard. There's a little Chicken Littles out there, and they're running for their lives.
Well, why don't we start with one of those? Let's do that. So that'll be our first question of the day. We're going to go to the voicemail. If you have questions for us, we love getting them on the podcast. It's podcast@uscfootball.com is our email address, or you can call us 206-888-6755. Send us a voicemail, and we will play it on the air just like this one.
Hey, Ryan, it's Miguel. I got a question for Gerard. What's going on with SC right now? Like, the offseason, it's not going anything good. I mean, recruiting, we're getting beat for McCarty, there's transfers, Prater, Carlisle. I'm also hearing that there might be other transfers. We have 7 spots to fill, so we can make the 15 that we could take this year. Not sure we get it done. I mean, like, there's no USC leans right now, so I want to get your thoughts on that and see what's going on with the SC staff. Thank you very much, and fight on.
Wow. They're getting beat on McCarthy, which they already got beat on McCarthy. So we could talk about that. Let's wrestle that monster.
Well, we have a bunch of, maybe to keep it general, because we have a whole bunch of McCarthy questions too.
Well, how about we just kill it all with one stone here? How about we just we go rapid fire by killing it with one stone?
Well, here, we have one more voicemail for a McCarthy question. You want me to play that one, and then you can get into it. Is that cool?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So people can hear some of the questions, and then I'll mention the names of other people that asked McCarthy.
Well, Ryan,
questions.
There's hardly anything good going on with USC recruiting.
I know.
We got to make it quick, because you just never know.
All right, here's the other McCarthy question.
Hi, my name is Francisco Storga. This question is for Gerard Martinez. I'm wondering if, since that was McCarthy commit to Cal, if it's literally too late to give him the sign on February 1st with the USC. And also, what happened? Why did he sign with them? I know the wide receiver, Jordan, if I'm saying the name right, Jordan Perkins, is the one that kind of pushed him towards Cal. But I'm not sure if maybe the coaches maybe tried too hard with him. But anyways, thank you very much. I love your show.
Wow, SC fans sound like they're walking the plank this week.
Is it that bad? Is it that bad, Gerard?
It sounds that bad, doesn't it? Oh, well, no. What's going to happen with USC recruiting? Well, first and foremost, let's get to Ellis McCarthy and talk about the big news coming out of the Army All-American game. 6'5", 315-pound, 5-star defensive tackle, commits to Cal on national television. And, you know, I've got quite a few sources on Ellis McCarthy and, you know his family quite well. And had a long talk with his father. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the specifics about what was said, but, you know, having kind of tapped a few different sources, you know, the original thought coming out of San Antonio was that this commitment to Cal was not going to stick. A lot of people kind of felt like, you know, he got caught up in the peer pressure. Jordan Payton, one of those players that was committed to USC long ago, was actually the first commit of the 2012 class, if you can remember. But he more or less was kind of pushed out of this class. I think what happened with Jordan Payton was Jordan wanted to take his visits. He wanted to enjoy the process. He's a kid that likes a lot of attention, and USC was just not comfortable with that. They didn't want any drama towards the end of signing day. And they felt like maybe Jordan Payton was going to be a guy that could create some drama. So it became a little bit of an ultimatum, you know, take your visits early or don't take them at all. And I think Jordan just kind of was very distrustful of that and wasn't sure of his place within the recruiting class. So they parted ways. It was mutual and I think beneficial for both parties. Jordan Payton is definitely talking bad about USC. I heard that from a few people behind the scenes. He's, you know, kind of got maybe a little bit of a grudge, a little bit against USC, and, you know, definitely with McCarthy and with some of the other players, you know, Kevon Seymour. There was a lot of kind of back and forth between the USC commits and the Cal commits at the Army All-American game. But at the end of the day, I think what it comes down to is the profile of the recruit. And I thought originally, you know, I said, this Cal commitment is not going to stick. I don't think he's going to go to Cal. I'm kind of backtracking on that a little bit. I think he's not going to USC. I think that the reasons he committed to Cal are reasons that really mean that he doesn't really going to have interest in USC, and I just don't think his parents have much interest in him going to USC. USC is a very fast-paced, very competitive football environment. You have to really want to go to USC to succeed at USC. You can't be persuaded to go to USC. And even though these coaches do a good job of going out there and selling USC, the guys who succeed, the guys who come in as five stars and leave as five stars, meaning they go to the NFL draft, are guys that have that real competitive spirit. They want to be in a fast pace, go, go, go. It's the city. It's live. I mean, USC is just a program that is all about motion. And I don't think Ellis McCarthy wants that in a college. I think that he wants to go somewhere where it's a little more low-key. He's not going to have a lot of attention. There may not be as much pressure for him to play early on. You know, Cal can do that. It's much easier just to slip into Cal right now as a freshman and make an impact and be a guy than it is at USC. Just flat out. It's just the way it goes. I mean, Cal has not had a very good football program for a number of years here. So, speaking of facts, I think that this is something that kind of worked itself out. And I know it sounds kind of, you know, like a means to an end here. You know, the guys that USC doesn't get are the guys that, at the end of the day, probably wouldn't be successful at USC. It's not necessarily like that, because I think with DeAnthony Thomas, I think, you know, USC definitely could have used him as a corner last year, and especially his ability to return kicks. I think with him, it was just kind of a personal choice to go away from USC, and there was a lot of weird, mysterious things that went along with that choice at the last minute. And it's kind of, I think, one of those things that you even talk to some of the Oregon writers up there, they don't know why he picked Oregon. And so, you know, that's kind of, I think, a different scenario and a different situation. I think with this one, Ellis McCarthy, having to talk to some people, I like I said, originally thought, you know, this is going to come down to UCLA and USC. Now I think it's going to come down to Cal and UCLA. And so I just don't think he's going to end up at USC. What is that, Ryan?
The sky is falling.
The sky is falling, yes. The sky has fallen, and it's done, it's over with, pick up the pieces, and move on. USC does have some leans. They do have some kids that are silently committed as we speak, but we can't talk about that. And promoting silent commitments isn't really smart, because guess what? Ellis McCarthy at one point was a silent commitment to USC. Oh, my goodness, I let the cat out of the bag.
You did.
I can now, because I don't think he's going to end up at USC. So, you know, silent commitments don't really mean anything nowadays, and leans don't really mean anything nowadays, because even publicly, Ellis McCarthy said that USC leaned the week before he went down for the Army All-American game. So, again, you know, that it doesn't, you know, we can get all pumped up and we can sit here and promote, oh, USC leads for this kid and USC's a lock for this kid. But at the end of the day, recruiting is recruiting. And so just because that's not something that, you know, you're going to see in every article and is going to be pushed out there, certainly doesn't mean that USC is not in a good place in terms of recruiting, because they are in a very good place, and they're going to have a huge weekend this weekend, January 13th, with kids coming from all over the map to officially visit USC. As far as I know, Zach Banner, 6'9", 310-pound offensive tackle from Lakewood High School, a guy who's a four-star who played throughout the week, more like a five-star at the Army All-American Bowl. He's going to be making his way down to USC for an official visit. USC's in a very good spot for him. They're going to bring in the number one corner in the nation, Tracy Howard, who's probably a little more of a long shot than Banner. In fact, he's a lot more of a long shot than Banner in terms of looking at USC. But they're going to bring him in. They're going to try to give him something to think about. You know, LSU looked pretty bad in the national championship game. He likes LSU. A lot of people feel like LSU is actually the school he leads for. We'll see if USC can gain some traction on him. You're going to have Stephon Diggs, one of the top wide receivers in the nation, five-star, was, again, another guy that stood out for the East team in the Army All-American game. He's going to come in for an official visit. We've seen some transfers for USC. That's going to open up some spots for some more kids. You know, at the end of the day, you kind of have to take losses with things that work themselves out. You have two different types of losses. You have the losses that are misses, and then you have the losses that are better for the program. And at the end of the day, you have to look at this rationally and see, how are they going to get to this 75? I think a loss is Amir Carlisle. I think Amir Carlisle was a tremendous addition, not only on the field for USC, but really off the field. And he was a young man that worked hard. He was smart. He was low maintenance. He was a good teammate. You know, what happened with that situation? As far as we know, he just wanted to get closer to his dad, who's working at Purdue. Why he goes to Notre Dame and not Purdue, I don't know. I don't have the answers for everything. But that, in my opinion, is a loss. You know, it's a running back that I think, could play for USC and make an impact for USC. And, you know, they're going to need a running back that can do that here in the future. Whether it's going to come in this class or not, it's pretty late in the game. They got to find that guy. So we'll see how that shakes out. Then you got a guy like Kyle Prater. Kyle Prater, very, very talented player. We've talked about him many times on the regular podcast as well as on the live show. Tremendous talent, but just couldn't really seem to get it done at USC in terms of being a guy that could go out there and use his size and be a guy that can make an impact for USC. And obviously he felt like, you know what, I'm better off going close to home. I'm just not going to be able to compete with these guys that they're bringing in. And so that, you know, again, kind of worked itself out more than it was a whiff. And the same thing goes with the recruiting process and some of these guys are bringing in. I think if Ellis McCarthy picks Cal, I think you start to wonder if USC was able to persuade him to go to USC, is he really committing to USC for the right reasons? Because if you're committing to Cal and the state of the program Cal is in, you kind of wonder, how does that fit in with where USC is and where USC wants to go? I mean, they want guys who want to win, they want to compete, they want to challenge themselves against the best of the best. And I'm not saying, you know, Ellis McCarthy is not competitive and he doesn't want to be a good player, but I think it's just not a fit. It's just not a fit. If you're committing to Cal at this point in time, which the way Cal's set up, I just don't think you're going to fit into what USC is doing right now. So at the end of the day, I know it's hard for SC fans to kind of to come to grips with. Ellis McCarthy is a tremendous player. He is as talented as everybody thinks he is. He is as big and as fast. You know, people who get on the peristyle and start trying to criticize, you know, his physical attributes, that's nonsense. He is a very, very good player. But I think at USC, maybe he's not going to be as good as he could be because I just don't think he's going to fit in. Not for the reasons he turned around and committed to Cal. So at the end of the day, I guess that's just it. You know, it's not rapid fire, but hey, it's two questions in one. So there you go.
Okay, definitely not rapid fire. Well, I want to let people know, too, we just put up Scholarshipology, which was coined on the peristyle by Doctor Who, so thanks to Doctor Who for that one. We've been calling it USC Scholarship Math, and we put the story up, just a quick story and updated scholarship chart, so you can kind of see where these recruits could fit in. As of now, Gerard, only four scholarship wide receivers, only four scholarship running backs. So before people thought, oh, it's going to be hard to bring in a running back, that could change a few things now that there's only four guys on each for each position group.
Yeah, definitely. And that's really the position I think probably USC kind of didn't see coming as being an issue this immediate. You know, I don't think they realized now they need running backs. And it's a position where you can kind of go by running back by committee. And I think they used that committee this past season, and I don't see anybody just jumping off the depth chart as being the guy who's going to get, you know, 20 to 30 carries a game next year. So I think, again, you're looking at it as a committee of running backs that you need to have. So really that depth chart becomes more important. Receiver position, you have guys that are a little more solid and mainstays that are going to get all the reps. Robert Woods, Marquise Lee. It's a good year for receivers out there to recruit. They can bring some guys in. Like I said, yes, I mean, there's, you know, I think Kyle Prater, tremendous talent, a guy that you wish could just kind of develop at USC and kind of see how he ends up playing. But, you know, as we've seen right now, he hasn't been able to really crack that rotation because I just think, you know, his disposition wasn't necessarily that of what Lane Kiffin and Ted Gilmore want. I mean, they want receivers who are going to go out there and be physical and be skilled at the same time. They want guys who go out there and run block. And I think as big as Kyle Prater was, that was one of his biggest issues, and I think that's why he didn't see the field a whole lot. And that's what you're going to see with all those receivers. They want guys who go out there and know how to play away from the ball as well as play with the ball. And so I think with the receiver position, there's always more talent to be had out there. It's easier to find guys, to put guys out there, and you've got really a solid, you know, top two there that you can depend on with a pro-style offense. I mean, this is not an offense that's going to run five receivers out there all the time. You're going to use your two tight ends, and so you got two receivers there. You're pretty good to go. But the running back position, I think that's definitely where it becomes a little more dicey, trying to get a little more depth where you can use a guy that can come in and give you some reps here and there. Because we saw Amir Carlisle got reps as a true freshman last year. You know, we're going to see more of George Farmer, obviously, than last year. He's the guy that I think USC would love to be the guy, you know, because he has that physical ability to be a game breaker. But that's putting a lot of eggs in that basket. You know, I think they want to. I think there are definitely people, you know, are already asking, well, you've seen some receivers transfer. Maybe this opens up a spot for George Farmer to move back to receiver. Everybody wants to move him back to receiver because he was a five-star receiver in high school because that's where they saw all of his highlights. But USC, I think, is all in with him becoming a running back. The question is he able to become that running back that they think he could be next year? You know, I don't know if he's going to make that transformation that quickly.
We'll see. But if they move him out of running back at this point, there'd only be three scholarship running backs. So I don't think that's happening. We'll see. There's 4-4 right now. Let's go.
The good thing about that situation, let me just add this, is that as a running back, he can play all of those positions on the offense that he can play as a receiver. But as a receiver, you're not going to move him as a running back. So basically, you know, out of the backfield, you can have him playing in the slot. He can play the Y. He can play the Z. He can play the X. He can play all of those types of positions as a running back, moving him by formation into the, you know, out there on the edge playing wide out somehow. You're not really going to end up putting one of those guys as a receiver into the offensive backfield and running the ball with him. So I think, you know, him being a running back, it's going to tap into his versatility a little more. And again, it kind of, you're kind of overlapping a little bit between those two positions. So you kind of have, you know, a half a receiver and a half a running back with him playing running back full time.
Okay. Well, we do have a couple pages worth of questions here. I'd like to get to them all if we can. And so let's try to do rapid fire. Do I have to pull out the egg timer, Gerard, or are we going to be good?
Let's do it. I just, you know, hopefully they're not as, you know, down and you know, really depressing as the first two questions.
No, I think they're kind of all over the map. We got lots of recruiting questions. So the Trojan Blast has definitely been a success. People are getting into it. So we're glad about that. We'll keep doing it for the foreseeable future. First up, Steven San Diego, wondering how badly the injury was to Jordan Simmons. Main question, it would affect his ability to play this fall, or was it superficial?
It seems to be more on the superficial side. There, the doctor said that, you know, it looked like it was just a sprain, MCL, and maybe a meniscus tear. He ended up not having his MRI after I heard that he was actually getting his MRI. So he never actually got his MRI there. He's going to have his MRI today. We'll hear finally, you know, what the verdict is. But at this point, it doesn't seem to be anything to do with his ACL. And that's the most important and the most devastating injury that you can have with a knee. So at this point, it looks like it's okay. And he walked around for a lot of the week, basically on his own, didn't seem to be hampered too much.
Okay. Let's see. We had Ron had a question. It's more doom and gloom. I think we already addressed that in the first one. So sorry about that, Ron. But it's just about USC not securing commitments at the high school bowl games. But I think Gerard addressed that. Bill in Orange County had McCarthy questions, and Kurt kind of had the same things. But they both mentioned Aziz Shittu. And Kurt even said there's talk about McCarthy, Shittu, and Armstead maybe considering the same school like Cal. What do you think is going on there? And is Shittu kind of a likely replacement for McCarthy if he's not able to come?
I say this. I think that there is more likelihood of Andres Peak, Kyle Murphy, and Zach Banner ending up at the same school than Shittu, Armstead, and Ellis McCarthy. I think that those three defensive linemen definitely want to kind of be the man, and I don't think they all want to go against each other, especially at Cal where you've got a 3-4. You've only got three defensive linemen. You're not playing all those guys at the same position. So Aziz Shittu actually was pretty heady about what was going on down there in San Antonio and all this talk of package deals and everybody playing together. You know, he told me flat out, you know, all these guys are talking about that, and it's all fine and dandy right now, but, you know, when guys start pulling the trigger and things start really happening, then we'll see who all wants to play together. And then he's waiting until signing day. So he's kind of sitting back. He's letting Ellis go to, you know, Cal. I think the feel is that Shittu probably still ends up at Stanford. USC's going to get a shot at him. He's going to come in January 20th. We'll see, you know, how that works out. You know, in terms of performance over the week, Aziz Shittu actually had a better week of practice than Ellis McCarthy, especially as a defensive end. And really, the guy that was probably the most dominant across the board all week was Andre Pipkins, who's a 6'3", 335-pound defensive tackle from Kansas City who's committed to Michigan. There's some talk maybe he's interested in visiting USC too. So really, you know, we'll see how it all shakes out with those guys. But my vibe is that Armstead, Shittu, and McCarthy are not going to end up at the same school.
Okay. Thanks for that one, Kurt and Bill in Orange County. Steve in San Diego had a little bit. I'll read it here and maybe get your comments, Gerard. He said with all the All-American announcements, he realizes this large class does two things. One, it addresses the needs of the program that USC is likely going to do this year. And then two, it allows you to take players that may have otherwise signed with other programs. He said, here's my point. Even if recruiting limits do not affect USC's ability to recruit a high-quality class that addresses need, I have no doubt now that the bigger effect will actually be point two, where USC will lose the battle by losing players to other programs that they normally could have signed. And some, even if they get a great recruiting class, we still let 10 players a year go to other teams or likely face in the coming years. It's a huge penalty. I still wish the USC administration would fight, but I know that's not happening. Keep up the good work and fight on, Steve in San Diego. What do you think about his points there that the scholarship limitations, even though USC's roster might be good, it could hurt them by allowing the opponents to get better?
It could. It might not. I mean, you want rapid fire? I mean, what
that's
do you want me to say?
Sure.
I mean, yeah, maybe. It just depends on where they go and how those kids fit in at those programs and what kind of coaching they get. I mean, we've seen some Pac-10 schools get a lot of recruits. I mean, look at Arizona State. You know, they've got a great defense over there talent-wise with, you know, half the Centennial football team from, you know, 2008, 2009. But they didn't get it done. I mean, they beat USC, and that was kind of their game. I mean, at the end of the season, they folded. You've seen UCLA get a lot of guys. They beat out for USC when Pete Carroll went to the NFL. You know, guys like Dietrich Riley, guys like Jordan Zumwalt, Cassius Marsh. Those guys aren't doing anything at UCLA right now. So, I mean, you can lose guys to other programs. It really, and this is, I know I'm going to sound like a broken record again, but it's player development. And that's what coaching is really about. Recruiting is great. You want to be able to bring in the talent, but you're going to miss on some guys. What you have to do is find the guys that you can develop into guys that can contribute. Just, you know, at a contributing level that you don't have anybody who's really dead weight in your program. And I think with this staff, they've been able to show that they've been able to get the most out of most of their players, and that's really important. So you're going to miss on some guys, and some guys are going to take off and go to other programs, and whether it's, you know, by selection or just by the fact that a guy like Ellis McCarthy just decides, I want to go to Cal over USC, you're going to miss on some guys, but at the end of the day, it really depends more on what the coaching is at those universities.
Okay, thanks for that one, Steve. Pops had a couple questions. We get this a bunch, and I'm not sure why, but Santa Margarita quarterback Johnny Stanton. People want to know if USC is looking at him. Do you think he's a Division I player? If he came to USC, I think it would be in a walk-on capacity, and he could be kind of the guy that could contribute in special teams and do some other stuff. But do you think it actually will get looks in Division I? What do you think about him?
Definitely a Division I player. We'll get a look at USC, but I think with the scholarship limitations, he is a guy that, you know, they may talk to him about preferred walk-ons and things like that. It's really early in the process. You know, he has some development to go, and I hate to pigeonhole a player and say, well, he's not good enough to be at USC as a full scholarship guy. I think we have to see more of him before we really make that assertion. But at the same time, he's a guy that, you know, we got to watch him in camps just to project where he really plays better. He played well, you know, quarterback throughout the playoffs and kind of that stretch into the championship game. He definitely looked like he could play quarterback at the Division I level, but he's also an athletic kid with a big body and, you know, maybe a guy that could fill that kind of that halfback role in an offense like USC. So, you know, I don't know if he's going to be the first guy that USC looks at as a quarterback. I mean, they're going to have to look at a few different guys, and, you know, Hayden Reddick is still out there, and they got to kind of look at him and see, you know, how he progresses from his ACL. There's going to be some evaluation that goes on. But I think he's definitely a guy that they're going to look at, they're going to recruit and talk to throughout the process and kind of figure out, you know, kind of where his best position is and if that best is good enough to be at USC on a scholarship.
Yeah, we've seen guys like Garrett Green come in and do a lot of different things. So, I mean, it could be someone along that line. Who knows? And, you know, maybe he's the starting quarterback someday. Who knows? You can't rule anything out. So we'll see. One other thing he wanted to know about the dead period and questions during the All-Star games, like could coaches be present talking to players and stuff in the All-Star game? What are the rules there regarding coaches and these All-Star games?
The rules are they can't really talk. They can't talk to the kids during the week. The coaches come in after the game is over, basically, and it's, you know, kind of a like a indoor swap meet, basically, of coaches. They're in the lobby of the hotel, and you have, you know, kids and their families talking to the coaches, and the coaches, they all get little rooms there set up in the hotel and bring them up to the room, and the room is not really anything special. You know, there's some chairs there, and there's usually a TV there, and they can't give them food, they can't give them drinks, so it's not necessarily like a party atmosphere. But I actually accidentally ended up going down to one of the floors where Notre Dame and Cal were set up, and, you know, they kind of had signs out there, Cal Bears go here, you know, Notre Dame go here, and the kids, you know, walk down there and meet with the coaches and have kind of an in-home visit, if you will, with the assistant coaches. So you know, the rules are just basically during the week, it's a competition week, so there's not much contact with the recruits themselves. But once that game is over, it's free-for-all, basically, of, you know, who they can talk to, shake hands, and try to set up some things. And USC made a lot of contacts down there Saturday night at the Army All-American game. And, you know, last year we saw what that meant, you know, the results of that with guys like Anthony Sorrow and Lamar Dawson. And this was, you know, back when, you know, they couldn't play in a bowl game this year. And they got some really good recruits and they closed on some guys. And that's why I'm very kind of cynical. And, you know, this podcast has been a little bit like, really, guys? Really? Are we already jumping off ship here with some of these questions and people being depressed about how recruiting is going? I mean, first of all, USC's got a really good class as it stands right now, and the guys that they're still in it for are tremendous. So you got to have a little bit of faith in the coaches and their ability to close. And I think those questions really have to be reserved until after signing day. I mean, if USC misses on, you know, Kyle Murphy and Andres Pete, and they don't, you know, find a guy that can replace up McCarthy, and they, you know, you start swinging and missing all over the place, then you kind of go, okay, well, yeah, there's some issues here, and they're going to have to find a way to address them personnel wise with who's on the roster already. You know, we saw that with the linebacker position when they missed out on Manti Te'o and Vontaze Burfict, but that was literally a signing day thing at the last minute where they missed out on Manti Te'o, and nobody really saw that coming. So I think you have to wait until that point. You know, you kind of have to wait and say, all right, you know, they're in it until they're not, and that not is signing day. So after then you kind of go, okay, all right, you know, let's kind of see what they actually have signed and what this class looks like and how it translates and mixes with the guys that they already have on the roster, the guys that, you know, are there that are not transferring and are solid with the football team.
And just people have to realize this is like the worst sanctions anyone's had to deal with and actually be actively recruiting and still being a top program. I mean, the team finished number 6 in the country by the AP poll, 10-2, has all these sanctions hanging over the head. Still now 10 scholarships down. No one's ever done that and has kept going. They're still going to bring in a big class, but it's pretty amazing what they're able to do. So I don't want to see all the doom and gloom out there that people are doing. I mean, Lane Kiffin's doing this under it's like one hand tied behind his back, and they're still going to bring in the class. There'll still be a surprise or two at the end, just like last year with, you know, Lamar Dawson and Andre Walker, stuff like that. Chuck Smith in Newport Beach, Gerard. He wants to know, there's been much written about UCLA's football failures, including the notion their admission requirements are too stringent, which to me is a red herring. This is what Chuck's saying. How do USC's admission requirements compare to UCLA's, Cal's, and Stanford's? That's from Chuck.
I really don't know, because I really don't know what Cal and UCLA's admission standards are like. You hear that now and again, and I know, and I think I answered this question just a couple weeks ago. I know that there's some differences in electives. You know, with UCLA's, like you have to take an extra art elective in order to get in there that sometimes kids flip up on. And Cal's kind of interesting because Cal does have some special ed programs there that they kids are allowed to slip in, you know, a lot of JUCO guys that they were able to get in over the years that USC could not because of that special ed program that they were able to bring in. So there are some differences, but I couldn't sit here and get in detail and give you facts on what exact classes they have to take and, you know, how a GPA differs from one school to the other, you know, with the core GPA classes, because really that's what it's about. It's about your core GPA and what classes make up that core GPA. So because the core GPA for UCLA may be a little different than it is for USC, which may be a little different than it is in Cal. Again, like I said, I know that art class was something that came up with a couple kids before, and it's just another elective that you have to take that counts as your core, whereas with USC, it's just another elective. It doesn't actually count as a core class. So that kind of complicated stuff. Is it a big deal? Is there this big deal between the kids that USC can bring in and UCLA? No. Okay, this is not Stanford. Stanford is definitely a tier above in terms of the admission requirements. Cal, UCLA, good schools just like USC is, and I think if there's any difference, it's marginal. So that'd be an excuse for UCLA being poor this past decade in football. No, it's coaching.
Agree
it's
with
Rick Neuheisel, it's Carl Durrell, it's the culture at UCLA, it's the whole lot of things that are going on at UCLA, and we'll see if Jim Mora is going to be able to turn it around. I mean, he's, you know, slicing and dicing the roster and, you know, kind of cutting some fat off of the roster, which you always kind of see with the new coaching staff. You know, with Lane Kiffin, you really didn't have an opportunity to do that because the NCAA did that by letting everybody transfer. But with UCLA, you know, they're going to force some guys out and try to change the mentality of the program. But, you know, the thing is, I don't know if he's going to be able to force out some of the administrators because I think it goes farther up with UCLA and the UC system when it comes to football and whether they take it seriously or not.
Okay, here's Hugh in Simi Valley, and he longs for the times of tailback U, and he wants to know, is USC going after a top 5-star tailback? Why aren't running backs literally lining up to play at USC? He's still not over Benedict DeAnthony. He has yet to hear the real story of the calamity, and Gerard already mentioned that. I don't think anyone knows the real story there. But yeah, we mentioned, Gerard, only four scholarship guys. Are there some new names out there at tailback that USC might be going after?
Not at present date. I mean, they're going to make some moves. I mean, this coaching staff is relentless as far as recruiting. But in terms of the top guys, it wasn't a great year for running backs nationally. And the guys that were really good were more of the, you know, kind of the speed scat back types. I mean, this was a year more of the scat back than it was of the big running back. And I think if they're going to get a power back, it's probably going to have to be in 2013, unless they really just pull somebody out of the rough and you know, think that they've got somebody that nobody really knew about. Are they going to be able to persuade some guy from out back east to be able to come in and all of a sudden recruit and commit at the last minute? I don't see it happening. You know, some of the guys that they're able to kind of cherry pick away at the end of last season, there was some coaching changes and there was some things going on with some of those programs that they were able to do that. And this year doesn't really seem like any of that is going to be able to give them opportunities to recruit a big time running back. The one guy that they were after was Briante Dunn, who's a 6'1", 210-pound running back from Canton, Ohio. And he re-upped with Ohio State. And that was kind of a guy at the last minute, tried to bring in as an early enrollee, tried to get him in on the visit. And Urban Meyer, you know, he shut it down and locked him up for Ohio State. So that was the one guy that they were going to try to take advantage of a coaching change and bring him in. But that didn't happen. So, you know, at this point, like I said, unless it's somebody kind of out of left field, a JUCO or somebody that we really don't know about, it's going to be really tough to bring in a good high school running back. And as far as why, like I said, it wasn't a fantastic year for running backs, first and foremost. And nationally, even going out there to, you know, a place like North Carolina to try to recruit a guy like Keith Marshall, you know, 5'11", 190-pound, 10'4", 100-meter rusher, just really probably the best running back in the country. You're going to go to North Carolina and get that guy, and you already have, at that point, you were you know, you had Amir Carlisle, who's a freshman. You had some things working on the depth chart as far as running backs. You had some depth. It's just one of those things where now, you know, Amir leaves, and it kind of makes that impact a little more, and you start to question the depth chart a little more. You know, four running backs is not no running backs. You know, it's not two running backs, and it's not even three running backs. It's four running backs, and, you know, all those guys are serviceable. It's just a matter of, you know, are they going to be able to find that combination to go with Curtis McNeil? You know, because we know Curtis McNeil's not a big guy. So, you know, they got to find another guy to be able to complement him. Is it going to be George Farmer, you know, or are they going to have to use maybe the fullback a little more and rush him, a guy like Jimmy Little Pinner or maybe even Soma Vanuku?
Okay, and he had one more question from Hugh. And we've addressed this a bunch of times. It's like, has there ever been any thought giving to academic or grant scholarships to students who can play football versus giving an athletic scholarship? And, Hugh, just to let you know, I mean, we talked to compliance about this. You can't – basically, the general rule is if he's going to play football, he has to be on a football scholarship. There's no partial scholarships. You can't play basketball and be on the football team. I mean, there's rules about years and stuff like that. But essentially, if you're going to bring in a player to play football and they're on scholarship – it's got to be a football scholarship. It's got to count towards that 75 total. Now, they can come in as a walk-on and be, you know, have some kind of academic scholarship, and you can do that. But there's, like, rules as far as years and stuff. Like, they have, if they come into the program and for 2 years and they're not on scholarship and then they join the team, there's kind of like this complicated rule thing. But the general rule is if you're going to play football and you're going to be on scholarship, it's counting towards that 75 or what normally is the 85 limit.
Yes,
that's nothing to add there, Gerard.
Rapid fire.
Okay. No, this is true. So yeah, there's no way around it. You can't do stuff like that. So
there's a way around it. Lane Kiffin will figure it out. I mean, he's, like I said, he's the guy that you want to be your head coach during all this stuff. And as far as keeping talent within the program and keeping the program at a certain level personnel wise, he's the guy. He's smart. He's been a recruiting coordinator before. He sees the angles and he's kind of, they'll do as much as they can to make sure they get every scholarship and every good player they can possibly get on the roster. So said it time and time again, people are not going to listen. Don't worry. As far as that goes with recruiting management and coordinating, Lane Kiffin and Ed Orgeron, they're the best of the business.
Yeah. We detailed that, I think, in the war room a few weeks ago too. So there's all the details on there. Are in that. You can check it out. Avery wanted to know, he had a first doom and gloom kind of thing early that we addressed, but he also wanted to know, as far as early enrollees, Wilson and Breslin, where are they going to fit into the equation for playing time? What do you think about those guys?
Weak side defensive ends, both of them. They're both going to compete for Nick Perry's job. You know, Devontae Wilson's got to come back from an ACL tear. So he's had surgery. He's still rehabbing. He's hoping that he's going to be able to participate in spring ball. I'm a little skeptical of that. We'll see what happens. And Breslin's going to come in. He's early enrollee. He's not on campus yet. We'll see, you know, how that all works out. It's, you know, these junior college players and getting on campus early. I say it every year, and people don't listen, and everybody gets all worked up about which guy's early enrollee here and there. But when it comes to JUCOs, man, it just seems like it's always hard to get those guys in early. So we'll see what goes on. I know he's not on campus yet. Neither is Gerald Bowman, who's the other junior college player that they have. He's trying to get in. He's still taking winter session classes, and he has till the 23rd, according to him, to be able to get in early. So, but the two defensive ends are both going to play that weak side spot, and they're going to, you know, try to be able to kind of replace Nick Perry. Neither of them are Nick Perry's level of talent, but you know, there are going to be some bodies in there that they're going to try to be able to bring in that can give some pass rush. I mean, Breslin led California junior colleges in sacks and tackles for losses the last 2 years. Wasn't playing against the kind of competition he's going to play against on Saturdays, but definitely some upside in that.
Okay, let's go to SP Trader. He wanted to know, do you think coaching priorities have changed after watching the Army All-American Bowl this past weekend? Anyone move up or down, fallen a bit? What do you think? Has kind of the board moved around? I guess we got to see a 10 of Troy to figure that out.
No, not really. I think that, you know, Shittu maybe has popped up the board a little more. You know, he's been a guy that's been inconsistent, but for the whole week he was pretty good, played well in the game. So, you know, maybe he's a guy that moves up a little more because he didn't have a very good performance at the Rising Stars camp. And I think, you know, coming out of the summer, a lot of people kind of felt like maybe he was overrated. I mean, he was a guy that was a 5-star to begin with and then kind of dropped to a 4-star because he just kind of was good and then disappeared and was good and disappeared. And you can't be inconsistent and be a 5-star level guy. So it was good to see him kind of rise to the challenge at the Army All-American practices and play well the whole practice, and there were some people that really, really loved the way he performed. I think Zach Banner, you know, did himself pretty well at Army All-American practices as well and kind of reasserted himself as a guy that's a priority that USC needs to get. They need to get Zach Banner, and they need to get either or Kyle Murphy and Andres Pete. It's got to be one of those guys that they get in addition to Zach Banner because they really need offensive tackles. I mean, they've got some good interior guys on the roster right now, and they're adding to it. Jordan Simmons and Max Turek, both very solid players, very, very good players, guys that can push for some contribution as freshmen or at least as redshirt freshmen in my mind. So you've got guys that can move in the center, move to guard, but you really need those big offensive tackles there, especially with Matt Khalil leaving. So I think Zach Banner definitely did himself pretty well at the Army All-American game. You know, like I said, a guy that kind of jumps up that wasn't even on the radar is a guy like Andre Pipkins. Wasn't being recruited by USC, but he's definitely going to be recruited by USC now. He's just a massive – he's Vince Wilfork is kind of what he reminds me of, the old defensive tackle for the Miami Hurricanes who's playing for the New England Patriots right now. Just a guy who's massive, doesn't look like he really should be playing at that weight, you know, kind of got that gut, and you're going, you need to lose weight, dude. Come on, man. But then you watch him move, and you realize, man, he's good as is, you know. I mean, he doesn't really need to lose weight, and he can use that size to his advantage, and he did all week in the game. So, you know, that's a guy that kind of jumps on the radar, and I think, you know, USC had to like what they saw with Stephon Diggs. You know, whether he's a legitimate recruit for USC or not remains to be seen, but I know for me, I was a little skeptical of, you know, how much of a playmaker he really was, but when I got to see him in person, he was really good. He was better than any camps I saw him playing and better than even what I saw from on film. So he's a guy that's legitimately fast, legitimately has some shades of a DeSean Jackson / Percy Harvin, you know, not quite as big as Percy, but I think, you know, has some of those, you know, instincts that he can play in the offensive backfield a little bit and do some things. And we'll just see if he's able to go away from home. He definitely kind of seems like a guy that is making some excuses to maybe go to a school that's just closer to home in Ohio State, or he's got Maryland on his list and stuff like that. You start to go, does he really, really want to go that far away? So, yeah, there were some great players. I'm not going to go through the whole list of guys who stood out, but I don't think there's any tremendous shifts in, you know, priorities. And USC, like I said, still needs offensive tackles. USC still looking for that other cornerback to really complement Kevon Seymour from what it looks like. And USC still needs, you know, defensive tackles. They've got two guys that are graduating, and that's not going to change. Whether it's McCarthy comes in or not, they're going to need somebody that comes in and is able to be part of that rotation. You really want to have
four solid guys in that rotation at defensive tackle. And they've got Uko, they've got Jared Tavai, you know, they've got, who am I missing? There's one more player that, well, they've got Christian Hayward, I think is going to be a good player for them. And they've got Antoine Woods. They're just young, but they need maybe another guy that can really make an impact and can make a push there for playing time next year. So they have a solid rotation and they keep what they had last year.
We had a question from Toronto. He said he loved Leonard Williams, the defensive tackle from Florida, and he felt that he was better than McCarthy. Did you look at him at all?
I like Leonard Williams a whole lot, and it's a guy that could definitely put on weight and can definitely end up being a strong side defensive end that can move in maybe via three technique. He's a really good player. Another guy that's going to probably visit USC January 20th. There's some talk about January 25th, but that would be a midweek visit, which is a little odd. But he's got some connections to Southern California. There's some angle there that USC has. He was a guy that came out during the summer for the Rising Stars camp, and USC's looking really good right now for that trio of Florida guys that came out for the Rising Stars camp. And again, it reinforces just being able to get these kids out there and get them around the coaches. I think the most valuable recruiting tool USC has had, whether it was Pete Carroll or Lane Kiffin, is the coaches themselves. And I think, you know, he was a guy that came out. Nelson Aguilar was a guy that came out, the Tampa five-star receiver, and also Tariq McCord, who committed to Miami at the All-Star game this weekend, but is still going to visit USC January 20th. So we're going to see a very large, very interesting Florida contingent coming out to officially visit USC January 20th. So we'll see how that shakes out. I got a feeling, you know, there might be still some good news for USC. I hate to, you know, disrupt the bar humbug, you know, the sky is falling chicken little guys out there. I might be ruining their day, but I think they're okay. I think USC is going to still be able to bring in a pretty solid class this year.
We love the international questions. This from Toronto. He ended it with A, which is cool. But he also said that he thought Max Turk was a beast in the Army game. But watching Zach Banner, he noticed some flaws, that he didn't have enough knee bend and tends to play straight up. He has a hop step in his pulling technique. Are these things that can be changed, or is he just too tall? And I actually talked to one of the other coaches, and they felt that he was playing a little, he stood up a little too quickly on some of his blocks. And being a big guy, maybe that's, it's kind of a hard tendency to fight. What did you think about that?
I think he's okay. I think that he just needs just coaching, you know, and I think he's a guy that has been better and better every time I've seen him play. And he plays a lot of basketball, and kind of when you're that big, I think early on you kind of are a basketball player, and he's starting to kind of come into his own playing football. And I've seen the knee bend, and I've seen athletically a guy that, you know, looks like maybe a young Jonathan Ogden, and I think talent-wise, there's a lot of people that are excited about him because he just really does have that potential to be able to do those things. He's going to whiff on some plays, and there's going to be some things that, you know, he doesn't do right and doesn't set himself up right, but I haven't seen anything physically that tells me he's too big or he's too tall. It's just a matter of him becoming comfortable in his own body. I mean, you got to remember, hey, when you're 18 and you're, you know, just growing up, and you're, believe me, most of the guys that are listening to this podcast right now are not 6'9". So, you know, you can imagine being that big, 310 plus pounds and 6'9", and you're 18 years old, your coordination is not all there with you at that time. But he's never been a guy that's looked completely out of place playing offensive tackle. And that was the first thing that I looked for when I saw him in person over the summer. I was like, you know, 6'9", you know, how tall is too tall to play football? And I don't think he's too tall. I think that he's just got a lot of talent and a lot of ability. It's just a matter of him being coached up, and you know, he'll get that in college.
All right, Gerard, we got a question from JD in DC. He had a couple of players listed. One of them is McCarthy, we already talked about. This one he's mentioned is Pigeons, P-I-D-G-E-N-S. I'm not sure who he's talking about, but he said this visit came out of nowhere. I know we pulled Walker out of Ohio last year, but he has always expressed interest in USC. Never out of it with that guy. Grabbing Pigeons would expand what this staff has done to a new level. That's JD in D.C. You know who he's talking about?
Pigeons? Is that like Tyrone Pigeons, the super secret commit from Louisiana that nobody knows about, including myself?
That could be him. I'm not sure.
I think you would mean Andre Pipkins, who's the guy that I've aforementioned, 6'3", 335-pound defensive tackle from Kansas City, who's committed to Michigan, who may visit USC here in the near future, but we haven't gotten confirmation on that yet. But Pigeons, I don't know anything about Pigeons other than they make a mess, you know, everywhere they go. But I don't know. Like I said, maybe the super-duper secret Kaboom ninja commit that nobody knows about that's really Reggie Bush's long-lost cousin, that maybe that's the running back commit that everybody's looking for.
That very well could be. JD, you can write us back and let us know if that's who, hopefully that's who you're talking about. But we're not really sure. And then did anything come from – this is from Jeff. One last one we'll get to. Did anything come from Ted Gilmore talking to Doriel Green Beckham at the Army All-American Bowl? Or was it just talk?
It was just talk. I think they had a relationship when Ted Gilmore was at Nebraska and recruiting him. But from what I understand, DGB wants to stay closer to home. A lot of talk is he's going to end up at Arkansas, but he's got, you know, Oklahoma, Alabama, and a few other schools in there. But from listening to some of the talk and the stuff coming out of his camp, you know, he took an official visit to Texas and said that Texas was a little too far. So Texas is too far. California is way too far.
All right. Well, Gerard, great stuff. We really appreciate you coming on the show and talking all about
it. Falling sky and hurdles with pigeons. Poop is everywhere. Man, this was a very difficult podcast to be able to get around. I'm a little worn out.
It was a difficult one, but you know, we got through it. I think we're cool, and we appreciate you coming on and talking USC football recruiting. It's always fun, and there's so much going on between now and signing day, so there'll definitely be
big
more.
Weekend, January 13th, be there.
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll get on the other side of that. You know, maybe some people will have a different opinion about the way USC recruiting is going, or not.
Right. And just a preemptive strike, people, if you want to send in questions, yeah, we definitely like kind of concise questions is good, and especially on the voicemail, something shorter as opposed to like a minute and a half is better. But you can't ask us like on Saturday morning how the official visits are going, since we're not allowed to talk to the players until it's over. So we can't talk to them yet. So we can't really tell you how it's going until they get back from their trip, and then we have a chance to call the kids and stuff. So Saturday morning,
how's it going?
Yeah, Saturday morning, we're not going to be able to know what the visitors are doing. So don't ask us that early. Is that cool? Is that fair, Gerard?
That's fair.
All right. Well, Gerard, thanks again for coming on the show, and thanks for everyone for tuning in to the Recruiting Trojan Blast on USCFootball.com. We'll be back again next week talking more USC football with the Peristyle Podcast. Check it out. We got some new stuff coming, too, on the podcast. We have to redo the intro and stuff, Gerard. So we have a lot of work to do, but we'll make it we're going to change the podcast up a little bit, make it a little better, and I think everyone's going to enjoy it. So thanks again, Gerard. Thanks for everyone for tuning in, and we'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.